wrapping up the show today with the discussion of something that we have left behind mostly on this podcast, bad football. But it keeps chasing the Washington Commanders. Luckily, it's not infecting the Commanders anymore. But man, there is some bad football being played around the NFL right now. In fact, you could put a number on it and say, Logan, it's historically bad. The folks who do DVOA, they've got kind of a threshold of just horrendous football at 30%. If you're 30% worse than the league average, play in, play out, offensively, defensively, special teams combined, they've never had five teams through 7 weeks at minus 30%. They got five this year. Carolina, Cleveland, New England, Miami, Las Vegas, Tennessee, Jacksonville, and New York are really struggling as well. Like, there's a lot of bad football being played. And you have teams like the Commanders who are absolutely taking advantage of it, as they should, bamboozling these bad teams. But when we take it out of the statistical realm and put it in the actual on-field discussion, Logan, like, what to you stands out is the bad football, and is it worse than you remember seeing in the league as a product as a whole?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's worse. Because you know, you're so focused on your own thing, like when you're playing. I think the thing that jumps out to me is, I think quarterback play in general is not as good. I think when, you know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, when all those guys retire, you're going to get worse quarterback play across the board. And I think you see that kind of throughout the NFL. And I think everyone's like, oh, defenses are striking back. I think offenses have just regressed because the talent at the number one, the most important position in the NFL is not what it's been. And we're kind of waiting for the next influx of guys to kind of build, you know, like Trevor Lawrence obviously plays in Jacksonville, and he was supposed to be the second coming, but has not quite reached that, you know, of those guys we just mentioned, where you're talking about him in the same vein as Andrew Luck, for example.
Right.
So I think that to me is like the number one driver. I think defenses are getting a little bit smarter. I think this, another thing that I think is maybe kind of overlooked, is there's been this huge push from an analytics standpoint to stop running the football. So you've got all these roster constructions that are built to just throw the football, and defenses are like, cool, we're just going to play coverage all the time. And it's made it really hard for young quarterbacks specifically to be successful. And I think when you look at the LA Chargers, for example, where Harbaugh's like, we're going to go back, we're going to play 80s football, we're going to run the ball, we're going to possess the ball, we're going to win in a last second exchange because we're an understaffed roster, you see the advantages of kind of playing that smash mouth style in today's NFL, because it deleverages the quarterback, it shortens the game, it limits the number of possessions your defense is on the field. So I think it's kind of a combination of things. Like, the league was kind of evolving and projecting to this quarterback centric model, and then all of a sudden their quarterbacks are all gone and you're having to repopulate those things, right? And so I don't think the league has adjusted quite yet to the lack of quarterback talent, if that makes sense.
For sure. So there's two things off that I think are really interesting. One, you look at the five teams that are below that 30% threshold: Carolina, Cleveland, New England, Miami, Vegas. And those are all teams, especially the worst two, Carolina and Cleveland, are the worst two offenders of this in the league, of investing, putting all their eggs in one quarterback basket, and then that quarterback fails. When I'm not necessarily saying that it's on the quarterback, especially in Bryce Young's case, like, he was drafted 1-1 overall into one of the worst situations we can ever remember in the NFL. Watson's a different story. But in Cleveland, they trade for Watson coming off the ACL. Obviously, we have no idea what's going on with any of the legal stuff. And he comes in and he's awful. But they not only gave him that much guaranteed salary and kill their salary cap, but they give up a bunch of draft picks as well. And so they're counting on him to elevate what is going to be, by nature, because of what was spent on him monetarily and draft pick wise, a depleted roster. He's instead one of the worst quarterbacks we've seen, and now you have an unmitigated disaster situation for them offensively. And the same token, they kind of did the same thing to Bryce Young. They gave up a ton of talent. They gave up DJ Moore and multiple picks for the right to draft Bryce Young. And he comes in and he's a rookie. He can't elevate anything because he's a rookie.
I just have to look this up just for fun. This is a crazy thing. Like, so to get Bryce Young, the Bears had to give the 9th overall pick, which ended up being their starting right tackle, Darnell Wright, the 61st overall pick, which is a starting cornerback, Tyreek Stevenson. They had to give up a first-round pick the following year, which is Caleb Williams. And they had to give up a second-round pick in 2025 and their best receiver, DJ Moore. Like, think about that. That's five starting players, if you count the traded player, five starting good players for them for one player. And it just shows you, I think, like we've talked about this ad nauseum, and we talked about this in the context of the Commanders quite a bit, is the environment and the ecosystem is so important. So if you're like, everyone's like, oh, we got to trade, get these people in here. It doesn't always, you got to trust the process. Trust the process when it comes to team building. And the tried and true model is building through the draft. So when you're just hemorrhaging draft picks for this one person, it very rarely works out. And I think you brought up a great point. Carolina and Cleveland, both really good examples of like, when that guy's not elevating your team, you're going to be in a bad spot.
Yeah, and that's why Jaden is so valuable here, is because they acquired him naturally. Like, they did not have to give up anything to take the quarterback at 2 overall, and then they got it right. And it shows when that guy can elevate the roster, like, oh my God, even if your roster's not where you want it to be, you can be really good. And I think that kind of gets to, like, New England obviously is in a mega rebuild, because, you know, it's funny. I heard Belichick making fun of the Giants the other day, and I'm like, look, you're the greatest coach of all time. You have 8 rings. Who am I to say anything? But, like, dude went a decade without a rookie draft pick getting to a second contract. Like, that's why New England's in a talent deficit. Miami obviously was a little bit different situation. They're built in a very, very, very specific way to which Tua is a perfect fit. Tua goes down, nobody else can run their offense, and all of a sudden they stink. And then Vegas is just, I don't know what they're doing. They're an absolute nightmare.
Well, it's a quarterback situation there too. You know, like, they just didn't have a long-term, like, I think it's good. They're all good in it. They're all good examples in different ways of not having a contingency at the quarterback spot. Like, if you're going to build an offense like that, like, I love Mike McDaniels. I love their offensive coordinator. I love how they built that team. But if you're going to mortgage on a specific quarterback style of play, you need to make sure your backup is similar, right? It's the same thing that they did with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore for a long time, with like the Huntleys and all these different kind of mobile scrambling type guys, the Josh Johnsons of the world. Robert Griffin was there for a little bit. When he goes down, you can still run your offense. And I think Cliff, you know, we just talked about Marcus and what he did in Carolina. Having a type at quarterback and just being able to be like, okay, we can kind of still exist in the same ecosystem we want, is extremely important. So it's not only the starter, it's your contingency if something happens to that guy. And like, Miami's a perfect example of that. Las Vegas, I think they were hoping to be elevated by a receiver talent, but the offensive line wasn't there. New England is a unmitigated disaster. You mentioned some of the talent deficiencies and how that started 10 years ago, you know, in terms of them building this roster out. And so they all have their own issue. And those are really maybe extreme examples, like the New England's, the Vegas's, New England and Vegas specifically, because the talent on the roster is so limited. But the quarterback is also part of that equation for sure.
For sure. And those two now in first year, new GMs, so they can hopefully rebuild. And in New England's case, it looks like they got their draft pick probably right as well. If Drake can continue to develop, he's actually given them a little bit of life, albeit in 2 losses in these 2 games. And clearly there's a long way to go for him with some of the picks he's thrown. But I think the other part of it that's really interesting on the quarterback front is, and I'm stealing this point from Robert Mays, our friend over at The Athletic, and something he said on their show. Because of the way the contracts work now, especially post like 2011, I think is when the rookie scale came in.
Right.
It is so much more valuable to have a rookie quarterback that the 28-year-old veteran doesn't really exist anymore at the quarterback position, where it used to be like, hey, can we go find a cheap veteran? Because if we take a guy 7th overall, that's the 3rd best quarterback in a draft, we're going to have to pay him stupid money. Now we take that 7th guy, and like, if he doesn't work, we'll take another one next year. Like, we've seen some teams do that. We saw Arizona when Cliff was there, like Josh Rosen, they take it 11th and it's not really working. They have the first pick the next year. It's like, we'll take Kyler. And so I think that the evidence point for that, of like how that can be really valuable, if guys that actually have experience, have been through some stuff and survived, is Geno Smith, Sam Darnold now with Minnesota, Baker Mayfield in Tampa. Like, those are good quarterbacks who were very high draft picks in Darnold and Baker's case, and needed some time in the league and needed to get to different situations. Like, Darnold going to the Jets was a nightmare. Baker, you know, the up and downs of the Cleveland Browns, like, get him out of there and get him in a more stable situation, and you know, have him run through the Sean McVay car wash along the way. And all of a sudden, like, he's a pretty freaking good quarterback. He's not going to be a top 10 guy, but he's going to be between 10 and 15. And so the value of that 28-year-old, let's call it veteran, who's seen some stuff, been through some things, has a working knowledge of the league, that is competent as a professional, like, that's not a route a lot of teams go. And like, Vegas is, I think, a good example of that. where it's like they probably could have gotten someone like that, and their best swing at that was Gardner Minshew.
Right.
And instead, you see what happens when you don't have either the young guy that you're developing or the competent, you know, mid-level guy in the league that can actually operate an offense consistently week in, week out.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. And so, again, like to that point, like offenses are struggling just generally this year. But look at the kind of the youth movement across the NFL. And I think that's exactly the reason why we're getting that, right, is all these young quarterbacks are more financially viable. And I think another great example to that, add to that list, is like the Joe Flaccos of the world. Like, look at the Indianapolis Colts offense. Like, I think Anthony Richardson is tremendously talented. I really want him to kind of figure out in a Josh Allen type of way, because he has the physical skill set in the same way that Josh Allen does. But the offense is better with Joe Flacco. It's more efficient with Joe Flacco. And it's not because Joe Flacco is a more physically gifted player. It's because he's got more experience. It's the same thing with the Bakers and the Geno's. Like, they've been around long enough. They've learned the position enough. And I think that's something people forget, like fans forget, is that it takes a long time to get comfortable with a certain level of NFL efficiency. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jaden Daniel is so incredibly unique and special, because it seems like he's just every week is just figuring it out at a rate that is kind of unprecedented, in a way that kind of CJ Stroud did last year. And I hate making that comparison because it puts a lot of pressure on Jaden, but that's unique. That's like the unicorn, right? Think about, you know, Josh Allen, how bad the Bills offense was before he like figured it out in year three or four. I forget exactly when that was. But it takes time. And so the NFL offense is going to be less efficient as the quarterback position stays young. And you just gave a good reason as to why that's going to be that way for a long time. And I do think teams maybe should zig a little bit here and say, hey, who is a guy like a Joe Flacco, like a Baker, like a Geno, like a Sam Darnold, that we can kick the tires on and give them an opportunity to play football while we have a young guy on the roster? So I think trying to think who did this. I think San Francisco was maybe a good example of this, where they drafted two quarterbacks. They had Jimmy Garoppolo at a fairly good number and let those guys kind of come along in the wings for a little bit. I think that's got to be the model, because you're not hurting your offensive efficiency the same way, and you're getting those guys up to speed at what it means to play NFL quarterback. And again, like right now, we look like we're in the land of milk and honey as the Commanders, because Jaden Daniels seems to have accelerated that process on his own with Cliff's help and obviously Dan's help as well. But I think that's got to be the model moving forward.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because then you're like, well, we don't have our guy for the future, and we're going to be too good to be up there in the draft and get him. But it's like, if you can develop a guy while he's learning behind, you know, a really competent guy, like obviously the best version of that, and this guy was a first round pick, but like Pat Mahomes learning behind Alex Smith had a huge impact on his career.
Jordan Love,
Aaron Rodgers before him behind Favre, like it is a proven model to an extent. There's no foolproof way to get the right guy at quarterback. But I would also say, Logan, I'd be curious your thoughts on this, especially is, could the same be true or said about other positions? Because the financial incentives are the same at all positions. It's more intensified at quarterback, because if I can pay a quarterback $5 million whenever the top ones are making $60 million, I'm paying 1/12, versus like, you know, hey, Brock Bowers is amazing, but he is not nearly as much of a discount compared to what the top tight ends are making, even if he's better than a lot of those guys. So there is like the financial part of this, but I do think that middle class element, you could look at other areas of the Commanders roster and say, how are they avoiding the bad ball trend? Like Nick Allegretti may not be the world's greatest left guard. He's a pro. Like he's a legitimate bona fide pro. Same thing on the other side. Like Bobby Wagner is not Hall of Fame Bobby Wagner necessarily anymore, but like that dude knows how to play football and he is helping everyone around him. Luvu is kind of, you know, I think a higher end upper middle class, if you will, and potentially based off his usage this year could become a star. But like the Commanders have found a bunch of guys who just know how to play, put them on the field together in a well-coached scheme. And like, lo and behold, they're 5-2 because they know how to play good NFL football.
Yeah, I think a great example of that is like offensive line. Everyone always bemoans offensive line talent and offensive line development. And I was kind of like, I don't know how this is going to work out with Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas, but I love the idea of getting him reps in a controlled setting and he's not starting each and every week. And think about how much better he's gotten, Brandon Coleman, over the course of this season without having to put everything on his plate. Like we're so conscientious of the environment that the quarterback's coming into. But I think with offensive linemen, it should be something kind of similar. You know, if you have the opportunity for a guy to develop, like the worst thing you can do. I think about Andrew Thomas in New York, where you're just like, hey, go figure it out. And it's like, he wasn't ready. And again, 2 years from then, he was ready. Or Colton Miller, the guy from Las Vegas, like he wasn't ready early in his career, but now he's ready. He's one of the best left tackles in football. Like, what if you could mitigate the ouch of that with a veteran presence? And I think when you look at the New York Jets, it's another great example. They draft Olufoshano in the first round, but what they do, they brought in Morgan Moses and they brought in Tyron Smith. So this player who's a little bit green can get some work in kind of a rotational setting. And I think maybe that's a better way. Again, if we're going to complain about it, oh, offensive line's not developing, what are some different tools we can use? And so I do think that this, again, we're a Commanders show, but I'm being generally honest here. I think that's a good way, what they're doing with Brandon Coleman. Yeah. Be like, hey, let's bring you along in a slow, controlled fashion. And you're going to end up at the end of this year with 700 snaps, which is great. But it's not going to be, you know, 1,500, because you're not going to have to play every single game this season. Or I might be off, whatever that is, 350, whatever the snap number is. But I think that's a really good way of looking at it. Even some of the stuff they've done with Mike Sammer still, you know, he's not playing every single snap. I think that's good because you're limiting some of their exposure. So, again, I'm not sure if they did that intentionally, but it's a interesting model that I would be curious to see if other teams apply to other positions, to your point.
I think especially if Washington continues to be successful and these guys come out at killing it, everyone's always trying to figure out what other teams are doing. And it's like, this seems smart. And I would be almost stunned. Actually, I would be stunned if it wasn't intentional, because everything that Adam Peters does is very, very intentional. And he's the one who sets up the program, if you will. And, you know, Quinn was obviously on board with it, if not agree with it, and would have brought the same idea somewhere else. So like, I imagine like when those two met for the first time, and there's all these different names from Ben Johnson or Raheem Morris to all the other candidates that we were talking about, and they sat down and they did that first interview, and all of a sudden there's a couple stories that pop that like Adam Peters and Dan Quinn really hit it off, and Quinn should be seen as one of the favorites, if not the favorite, coming out of the first round interviews. I wonder if that's one of the things they talked about in terms of like how they really want to build this thing from the ground up. And I think that other teams would be smart to emulate it, and you have to find the ways within your what you want to be as a football team, within your salary cap structure, with all of that, with the picks that you have, because it's a lot easier to do, by the way, in one of the best quarterback classes that we've seen in a long time. We have the second overall pick. And by the way, the guy who's going to go second is an exact perfect to a T fit for what you want to do and who you want to be from a character standpoint. That certainly helps you. I don't want to say skip steps, but graduate a few steps quickly. Yeah. But and man, I mean, there's other teams that definitely are going to be taking pieces of this.
And sure, and even with the Cornelius Lucas thing and the Brandon Coleman thing, you need a Cornelius Lucas, and those guys just aren't floating around everywhere, right? Like it's there are challenges to this, you know, that that they've done a good job with talent evaluation, but finding those pieces is super important. And you know, we're kind of digressing, but like the Commanders have just done this process over this last 2 years really well, and I think, you know, one of the things that I'm excited for is that they seem, again, to have this long-term vision, which some of these other teams we just talked about don't necessarily have. Yeah,
what's the vision in Las Vegas?
Yeah, like, seriously, vision in Vegas, vision in Carolina right now, like what are they doing? Cleveland, same thing. Like, they started Dorian Thompson-Robinson in the game. Like, as opposed to...
Jameis was the third stringer.
Like, just is that you want him to be your starter moving forward?
Yeah, I wonder if that's what's going to happen this week. Like, is Jameis starting this week, or is DTR starting this week? I don't know, but DTR was the backup. So we'll find out. Yeah. Carolina, I think maybe a little bit more this year than certainly last year. They were like, oh, let's invest in the offensive line. Like, Dan Morgan seems to have a little bit more of a clue than whatever Scott
Fitterer. I'm not saying Fitterer they have no clue, but
yeah, it's but just... also like I feel bad for Scott Fitterer and some of the other people that were brought in there, because I think the owner's driving that ship, and we know that that's a bad situation. So you have to have a vision, you have to be able to go execute it, and like guys like Zach Ertz become really important, like to kind of you know, a safety bridge, if you will, a life raft. Hey, by the way, we're going to make sure that you don't fail because we're going to give you a veteran tight end. And by the way, that veteran tight end is probably also developing Ben Sinnott every day to be your tight end of the future. And next thing you know, Jaden and Sinnott are, I don't want to say Mahomes and Kelsey, but like they're going to grow up together with the Commanders. And that's a great thing.
Yeah. What did we just talk about with Carolina? Like they're starting three rookie players, tight end, two receivers. They're starting three rookie offensive players. And the offense looks like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have
to
level.
To their credit, Adam Thielen was brought back and he got hurt. And that offense was better when Adam Thielen was in it. There wasn't a very long stretch that Dalton was playing and Thielen was playing, but when it was, like, they were a significantly better offense.
Right, but we're talking about mitigating and managing risk. Like, we could have been like, hey, we're going to draft a tight end in the draft. It's going to be awesome. You know, like, and he's going to develop with Jaden Daniels. But why? If we can manage some of that risk with a guy like Zach, who's a very productive player in the twilight of his career, no doubt. But, like, I watch Zach on the weekends, and I'm like, man, he still's got that dark art of running routes. He understands how to create separation. He's the quarterback security blanket. And like you said, Ben Sinnott's going to learn from him, right? And it helps Jaden Daniels' development because you get a player who's NFL ready, having Terry in there, bringing in Austin Eckler from a pass protection standpoint. All those decisions, like, were just the right ones. And trusting the evaluation and trusting those guys could still do it is also a big part of that, because how many times have we seen teams bring in guys who were a big name but couldn't get it done? So
right.
I just think the whole thing, the whole model of kind of softening the landing, and it does seem very intentional for all of the rookies, was very cool. So
for sure. And by the way, offensive DVOA, the third best offense in the league right now, to bring things full circle, your Washington Commanders behind Baltimore and Buffalo. So it is working to a T. We'll see what they can do on Sunday against Chicago. We will break down that matchup on the Thursday show, so make sure you are subscribed and stay tuned for that. For Logan, I am Craig. Thanks so much for watching and listening to Take Command.